Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, and that means peace be on you and the mercy of God, the mercy of Allah and His blessing. Alhamdulillahi namaduhu wa nasta'inuhu wa nastaghfiruhu wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa min sayyiati a'malina man yahdihillahu fala mudhillahu wa man yudhlil fala hadiyalahu wa ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna muhammadan abduhu rasuluhu. All praise is due to Allah. We praise Him and we ask Him for help and we ask for His protection. And we seek safety in Allah from the misdeeds in our own selves, the weakness in our own selves, and from the evil consequences of the things that we do. And whoever Allah guides, there's none who can lead him astray. And who Allah finds in error, meaning deviating, there's none to guide him. And that is if that person doesn't repent and come back and ask God for forgiveness and commit himself to follow the guidance of Allah. So if he stays on the outside of God's mercy by rejecting God's mercy, then there's no one who can guide him or her. And I bear witness that there is no God, meaning there's none to be worshipped as a deity, as a supreme power in the universe, but the Creator, Allah. And Muhammad, peace be upon him, and by Muhammad we mean Muhammad ibn Abdullah ibn Abdul Muttalib, from the tribe of Quraysh, who lived in Arabia, which is now called Saudi Arabia, over 1430 some years ago. And he lived for a period of about 63 years. He was a human being just like us, but God blessed him with a special gift, which is the revelation of his divine message, which is called the Quran, the glorious Quran, the blessed Quran. And so we accept Muhammad as our guide, but Muhammad is an ordinary human being in the sense that he lived a common person's life, in the sense that he was married, he had children. He had difficulties, tests, like everybody has in daily life. And he got sick. And he struggled with his family members, as many of us do. But his struggle was because of his devotion to serving God and giving God's message to the people, not some of the issues that cause us to have struggles. In fact, until he became the messenger of God, he was very highly respected and regarded by his family. And they looked up to him. They considered him to be one of their leaders. They went to him for guidance, and they trusted him so much that when they went on journeys, since they didn't have banks with safety deposit boxes back in those days, they would give their valuables, important papers and jewelry, currency, or whatever they wanted to make sure was safeguarded while they were gone, they would give it to Muhammad, peace be upon him. So he had a very, very good relationship with his family. But when he became God's messenger and began to correct their thinking, attempt to correct their thinking, to guide them to do what God wanted them to do, then he had problems. But today, because I'm recording this, and every Friday night, I actually broadcast on the same channel on the radio that we call in for Ta'lim on Sunday. I have a broadcast at 7 p.m. every evening where I broadcast Kutbah. So I'm going to be speaking as though people that are not here were here. In other words, there's a lot of people that will call in, some Muslims, some Christians. So because, as you can see on the display outside, which is called the nativity scene. Nativity relates to birth, nacion, birth, coming into life. They call that the nativity scene because of the story in the Christian teaching about Jesus, who we know to be the prophet Isaiah and Miriam, but they talk about him having a special birth and people coming from all around to witness him. They weren't there when he was born, but shortly after he was born, they say that an angel came and announced to the people that Christ had been born, and there was a bright star, and it guided the people to this, some people say a cave, and some people say a small dwelling that they kept the animals in during the winter. But according to scholars, the event did not happen in the winter time. It happened in the springtime. So there's a lot of confusion in their teaching, but we're not going to go with that. I want to talk about what the Quran says about not just the prophet Isaiah and Miriam, but the actual story of the Quran has two meanings. And it's important as you begin to study the teaching of Al-Islam, you have to understand that the Quran says that there are two meanings in the Quran for many of the things. Some are straightforward, they just take it the way it's stated, but it also says that they have some meanings that are allegorical. And allegorical means that they are stories that have another meaning that's not on the surface. So when we read the story about Isa in the Quran, there's two meanings. And we have to understand how to take these meanings in their proper perspective. And I'm not going to get into a deep intellectual lecture about that today. Maybe as we advance in our Talim program, we'll talk about that. But we want to dispel, for the benefit of those that need to know this that are here, but for the benefit of those that are going to be listening to the program broadcast later, the idea that Isa ibn Maryam was God, because that's a very, very egregious mistake to believe that any creature of God, and obviously a person that's made of flesh that comes from the womb of a woman, is a creature of God, because it's God that causes those things in the process of gestation, which means the coming into physical being inside of a womb. Those laws that cause the baby to ingest through the umbilical tube, the nourishment from the mother, that's all established by the Creator, God. So Jesus is a creature of God, no matter how you look at it. And even the Christians say that, but they take it a step too far, and they say that he was God, but he was a creature of God. Well, as I was just saying to our brother before we began, nothing that the Creator does is illogical. We may not understand it because our minds may not have reached the level of knowledge and understanding. But everything in God's creation fits together mathematically. Everything is in order. Nothing is weird, as they say. It may look weird because we don't understand it. For an example, about a month and a half ago, I happened to witness something that for some people that did not know the science of it may have seemed very weird or strange. There was a full moon in the sky, beautiful yellow moon in the sky. Well, I knew what was going to happen because it was advertised in the news. And so it was advertised it was going to begin about 2:30 in the morning, this event. Now, if I had known that and I had just been out late at night and I saw this event and I didn't know, I would have thought it was weird, because what happened was that the moon became darkened. A shadow began to move across the face of the moon. It wasn't a cloud, but it was a shadow. And it almost totally, as they call it, eclipsed. Almost totally covered the moon, just a little tiny speck of light. And I had read that this event only occurred the last time it was occurred about 580 years ago. Now, I'm not saying that it only occurred so we could see it in North America. It only occurred so that anywhere on the earth someone could see it 580 years ago. It was a phenomenon. But if somebody didn't know the science and the mathematical logic of what was going on, they would have thought it was some kind of weird event. Some people may call it a miracle, but it wasn't anything weird about it. It was something that was in the order of Allah's creation, caused by the reflection of the earth on the face of the moon as it was in position with the earth, so it was basically blocking out the sunlight, because it is the sun reflecting on the moon that causes us to see moonlight. But see, if we don't know science, and God gives us intelligence to be able to learn science, a lot of things will seem to be very weird or mysterious to us. So during the time that Christianity was being formed, there were a lot of things that had not been coming to the scientific consciousness of the people. They were in what was called the Dark Ages. And so they were very superstitious, and they made up a lot of, and that was the best they could do, ideas, not based on any foundation of reality, but just on their imagination. And so one of the ideas that they came up with was the idea that because human beings had gotten away from serving God and become so evil-minded, that God had to take a human form, and then in his human form had to be sacrificed by the evil people. And then, though he was totally dead, pronounced dead, as they would say, not just looking dead, but actually dead, in a grave, that he brought himself back to life through his own power, because he wasn't just Jesus, he was God. Now, many hundreds and thousands and millions of people believe that and still believe that, even though it makes absolutely no sense. I will tell you, as a brother that's been studying this religion longer than any of you have been alive, unless you are 53 years old, anything that does not make any sense to you, you should question it. I don't say that you should reject it. I don't say you should ignore it. But you should question it. You should question it to the ends of the earth to try to find out enough information so that it does make sense. Because if you don't do that, then you are neglecting one of the greatest responsibilities that he has given you, and that is to think. And we look at the story in the Quran of Prophet Ibrahim. And there were things that he did not understand, but he did not leave himself in a state of confusion and darkness and misunderstanding. But he asked Allah to help him to understand, to guide him to understand. And we know the story. Many of us have heard the story. And I won't go into the details of it. But as he questioned the, what I would say, significance of certain astronomical events, the rising and the setting of the sun, the stars, the moon, Allah gave him, by the power of his created intellect, a greater understanding. And as he came into a greater understanding, though his faith was always strong, but faith without knowledge is limiting. And I'll give you one example, and I want to get into the heart of what I really want to talk about for the program tonight. If you are a commander, and you don't have to be a commissioned officer to be a commander, if you're the senior person in a squad, and the squad leader, the sergeant, is injured and taken off the field or killed, and you have to take command, you need to radio back or send a messenger back to the platoon leader or to the company headquarters, so you can get a bigger picture of what you're facing What is the intel concerning the threat to my unit? What resources do I have to back me up? Is there going to be some help coming? So you can plan with intelligence. Because if you go out there just on blind faith, saying you and your six or seven men that have survived the attack out of the however many men are in your squad, 11 men or whatever, they may have reduced the number since I was in the Army. You're going to probably commit suicide with your men because you may have faith that your men are capable with limited resources to overcome a force confronting them with greater resources and greater numbers. But the chances are that faith is not going to save your men on you. Now some people may say, well, Brother Musa, what about the story in the Quran and in Islamic history where Prophet Muhammad was confronted with 1,000 soldiers, heavily armed soldiers on camels and horses at the Battle of Badr, and he only had 300. And they didn't have anything more than rudimentary weapons like a few swords and spears and pitchforks. They didn't have a cavalry. And God saved them because he sent his angels to help them. This is a story we tell all the time in our Islamic educational program. But see, what a lot of people don't understand, that there is a God, and God uses the forces of nature. And it said that these many, many soldiers, even though there were only 300 people on the side of Prophet Muhammad, that's not what they saw. They saw a force a lot more powerful than, I won't say existed, because it was powerful because they had such strong faith in God, they were fearless. They were willing, and some even wanted to die fighting in the battle of the prophet and the believers at Badr. And this power, this internal power that's created by that faith, gave them the energy. I'm going to close by saying this. Many years ago, shortly after I had converted to becoming a Muslim, and it was 1969. It was in the fall of 1969. It's about 52 years ago. And the leader of our mosque made an announcement. We had a meeting on a Juma night. It wasn't a Juma service, but it was a meeting we had later that evening. And he said, I need some volunteers for a special mission. He wanted some brothers. The sisters had all been excused. They'd been sisters earlier, but they'd been excused. He said, now this is the mission. And this was in San Francisco, California, in one of the worst neighborhoods. They had a lot of drugs, a lot of crime. But see, what we were trying to do was reform those people. So we planted our religious center where we could get out and reach these people, hoping that we could help them to overcome these difficulties, these challenges, moral challenges. But we found that there were people that were bringing prostitutes out in the street, right in the area of the mosque, on that block, defiling our holy area. And we had spoken to these men that were bringing these girls and asked them to stop doing that, to respect our religious house of worship, but they refused. So this night, the leader said, we need to stop this by force if necessary, because we cannot allow it to happen anymore. So I volunteered. I had only been a Muslim for less than a year, but I was a soldier. Not just a soldier for Al-Islam, I had been trained in the army. And so I said, I'll volunteer. And he says, well, what you do is when they come out, you confront the person, they call them a pimp, that's in charge of the girl, and tell them to remove those women from out in front of our place, off the block. And if they don't do it, then you're going to have to make them leave, make those girls leave. The point of time came, the pimp parked the girl on a few feet away from the door of the mosque, and he went inside this coffee shop so he could kind of keep an eye on her. I went in there and I explained to him, I said, look, we've talked to you all before, I'm asking you for the last time, move that girl from in front of the mosque. He looked at me like he didn't want to listen to what I said. I said, okay, I'm telling you, this is it, I'm not warning you anymore. A few minutes later, I went outside and I spoke to the girl and I said, you got to move. She said she wasn't going anywhere. So I forcibly removed her. I won't go into the details, but I didn't hurt her, okay? But I removed her. Long story short, as they say, the pimp took the girl and left in his car. By this time, we had called the leader and he had called the members of the Brotherhood, and we had about 30 to 40 people that, here was 11, 12 o'clock at night, that got from their beds, came out, and rushed over. Some of them lived as far as 15 miles away. They rushed over. But before they got there, the six of us that had been volunteers for that mission were confronted not just by this pimp, but by him and a car full of his partners. And that night, Allah showed me something that I had only read about in stories. He showed me what some people may call supernatural power, but I know it wasn't supernatural because what I did wasn't really something that had never been done before. But I almost defeated a little army that had weapons, including a gun. Now, I didn't have any gun. I didn't have any knife. I think I found a stick on the ground. But I had so much faith and so much energy in me that I climbed on top of an automobile that was parked nearby where the scuffle was taking place. And I saw one of the people that was attacking one of our brothers. And I dived off of the top of the automobile and flew through the air, not long, not anything weird or superstitious, you know, maybe only about 10 feet. But I flew through the air with a force that I never had felt before. And I landed with my chest hitting his shoulder at the back and knocking him down. And then when we both hit the ground, because I knew how to fall because I had taken this in my training in the Army, then I began to pounce on him in such a way that it scared him so bad he jumped up and ran away. Now this man had a weapon. So I'm telling you this story, but there was nothing weird about that. There was nothing supernatural about that. It was nothing weird or supernatural about the followers of Prophet Muhammad did, but it was the power of their faith that made them overcome their fear. And when the enemy saw this, they thought it was an army much larger than it was. But I'm saying all this to say that we have to stay grounded as Muslims in reality. But the reality doesn't necessarily limit itself to our current understanding. So we should strive to increase our knowledge so that our understanding can increase. Because when we have a better understanding, then we can help those people in the dark to be able to come out of the darkness. And that's the reason why Allah revealed this book to a man who historically had said he had good mother wit, common sense, but he didn't have the education of the scholars of his time. But God gave him the knowledge and the understanding so that he became the leader of all of these people that wanted knowledge, that wanted to advance. And that's what we're trying to do here. We have a mission here. You may be leaving and going somewhere else, but wherever you go, wherever you go, understand that you have a mission wherever you go. It's to bring the people that are in darkness out of the darkness, as Prophet Muhammad brought his people and many people in the whole universe of humanity that wanted to be enlightened out of the darkness. Everywhere you go, there's going to be an opportunity. Even if you go to Saudi Arabia, I'm not trying to impress you or elevate myself in your eyes, but I remember when I was in Saudi Arabia back in 1992, and without going into the details, I was invited to go aboard a Arabian naval vessel, a ship, as a visitor, as a guest. I was on a ship, and so me and another commission officer, because I was a chief petty officer, which is a senior enlisted person. It's like a warrant officer in the Army. The only difference is chief petty officers don't rate a salute, but we have pretty much the same responsibilities. And this lieutenant and myself boarded a rubber inflatable boat, a real boat. You've probably seen those in the movies and training. You know, the SEALs use them a lot, and the Delta Force use them a lot. And we went from our ship to the other ship, and we got on the other ship. It was prayer time. And so the people that weren't actually on post, on duty, lined up on the deck to pray, and I joined them. And then they asked me a little bit about myself and my background. I told them. And they started asking me some questions, I guess, to find out if I knew Islam. Because I told them I was from America. They didn't know people in America knew Islam, that we studied Islam. They didn't know that. So I started teaching them about Islam, things they didn't even know. And one of the things that I learned while I was over there is that a lot of people know the rituals, they know the customs, they know the do's and the don'ts, but they don't really know the Quran. They can recite the Quran, but you ask them to explain something in the Quran, even though they speak the language, they don't know it. It's not their fault. They never have been taught. And one of the reasons I found out is because a lot of those countries have been governed by dictators. And some of the things that are discussed in the Quran will make them become wise enough where they won't willingly submit to those dictators. So I've been told that in a lot of those countries, it may be changing now, but in some of those mosques, the kutbas have to be cleared by some security official, some government official, so that the people that are giving the kutbas won't cause the population to rebel. That's not Islam. You don't limit the knowledge of people because you're afraid of their group power against you, especially if you're doing wrong. So I will conclude in just a minute. I just want to say this about Jesus. Jesus is not an Arabic name. Jesus is not even a Greek name, and the Bible was originally written in Hebrew and Greek. It's not a Hebrew name. So the Hebrews call the prophet that in Arabic we call Isa, Yahshua. Or in English it would be pronounced Joshua. But when the Greek people began to be converted to this new form of religion called Christianity, which was not what the prophet Isa taught at all, some of it maybe was, but most of it had changed to accommodate the paganistic ideas of the Greeks, then they took the meaning, which means purifier, which is what the name Christ means. And they took the name Jesus, which actually means, Yahshua actually means a servant of God. And they changed it to a Greek word that I don't know, but the people that changed the Greek into English, they made the name Jesus to fit the definition of who this prophet was. But it says in the Quran in Surah Al-Maryam, and I'll read it in English. I love to hear it in Arabic, and some of it I can say in Arabic, but I'm not going to do that because my audience tonight may not understand what I'm saying, and you may not. But it says, relate in the book the story of Maryam, when she withdrew from her family to a place in the east, and she placed a screen to screen herself from the people, and we, this is Allah speaking as we said to her, our angel, and in tradition we're told that's the angel Jibril, the same angel that appeared to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And he appeared before her as a man in all respects. And she said, I seek safety from you. I seek refuge from you, or safety from you, to Allah the Most Gracious. So don't come near me if you fear Allah. And he, this is the angel that appeared to her as a man in all respects, he said, no, I'm only a messenger from your Lord, from your Rab. Rab is a word we'll discuss in detail some other time, but I'll say Lord. To announce to you the gift of a holy son. Now the key word here is holy, not son. Some people, they put emphasis on son, but the key word here is holy, and I'm going to explain that. And she said, how shall I have a son, seeing that no man has touched me? In other words, she was a young girl, probably about 16 years old, and she was a virgin. And the angel said she's going to be pregnant and have a child. She says, how can that happen? And she says, and I'm not unchaste, meaning I'm not somebody just go out and let somebody get me pregnant, and I'm not married. And at that point in time, she didn't have any plans to get married. She had sheltered herself from the people so she could just focus on serving and worshiping Allah. And so the angel said, so it will be. The Lord said, that's easy for me. This angel telling her, the Lord said, that's easy for me. Pardon me, I want to back up. And so, continuing, he said that God said, we wish to appoint him, he's speaking of her son. There's no question that Maryam is the mother of Isa. There's no question about that. The question is, who is his father? But we won't get into that today. Every man born on this earth has a physical father. And I can explain the science of that to you from a biological reality point of view someday, but I won't do it today. And we wish to appoint him as a sign unto men. Now the key word here that we need to understand is the significance of the word sign. Because as I said earlier, in the Quran, something things are representing other things. A sign represents something else. In other words, if you're driving down the street and you see a sign, usually a yellow sign, and it may show that the lanes are going to be reduced from two lanes to one lane, but that may be a mile down the road. It's just getting you ready for the reality. A sign is something just to prepare your mind for something else. So the allegorical stories are to help our minds to get to a stage where we can understand something even deeper than what's on the surface. So it says, We wish to appoint him as a sign unto the people and as a mercy from us. And it is a matter so decreed. And then it says, so she conceived him. Now, the Christians, between that last part of what I just said, they add something. And they say the angel descended upon Mary. God descended upon Mary. And she became with child. It's just like some shadow spirit, like a spiritual veil wafted out of the sky and covered her. And this covering caused her to have the chromosomes of the male to unite with the chromosomes of the female so that human conception could take place. The Christians have added that. It's not in the Quran. Where'd they come from? Because out of their superstition, since they couldn't figure it out, they had to invent something. It has been figured out. It has always been figured out. It's just that many of the Muslims, because we were in many countries under Christian domination for as long as 200 or 300 or 400 years, we didn't have the power to teach ourselves. We can only get our teaching from those that the government over us appointed to teach us, and many of these people have been influenced by Christians. So a lot of Christian thinking slipped in to the Islamic teaching, unfortunately. And for the last 30-some years, I've been working very hard right here on this post for the last 20 years to get that, this information out of our thinking. And y'all come from different places. Well, you may be from America, but you're from India, you're from Turkey. I've had brothers, and I'm not putting myself in a position, but I've had brothers from Kazakhstan, from Bangladesh, from Pakistan, from Egypt, from Morocco, from Tunisia, from Qatar, from Abu Dhabi, from Saudi Arabia, from Abu Dhabi, from England, from Sierra Leone, from all over the world, sit right there in front, not in this building, but in another building. And I've been working for over 20 years trying to help them to come out of the misunderstanding that has grown in their own countries. And I did that when I was in Saudi Arabia on that ship. And the brothers thanked me for that, because nobody had taught them the way I'm going to teach you, because God blessed me for 33 years to be under a wise sheikh that went over to Arabia and sat down with the great scholars of Arabia. And they bowed and respected his knowledge that God blessed him with. So I've been blessed. And I would never tell you anything that is not right. Inshallah. Because if I cannot convince myself that if the prophet was standing here teaching you that, if I can't convince, I won't say it. Because anyone, whether it's you or you or you, and one day if you want to, you can come up here and teach. Anyone, if they want to, I will give them an opportunity to share what they have with our people. But the thing is that anyone standing up here should remind himself with every word that comes out of his mouth to make sure it's what the prophet would be saying if he was in the same environment, in the same situation. That's the role of the Katia. So we're going to get ready to close now. So it said, she conceived him, and she retired with him to a remote place. And then going to another chapter, chapter Surah Ma'idah, it says, in blasphemy is a word that makes me have a little fear, trembling inside. Because blasphemy is an attack against the Creator. To accuse the Creator of something that is false. To basically almost to stand and shake your hand in rebellion against the Creator. That's blasphemy. And the Quran says, in blasphemy. Now, what the Arabic says, It says Lakad Kapara Ladina. And the root word in that sentence is kapha. But the interpreter and angel say knew what it really was saying, so they used the word blasphemy. But when you use lakad at the beginning of any sentence, that's like pounding your hand on the desk and saying, listen to this. This is serious. It says, lakad kapara ladina. Lakad kapara ladina. That it is blasphemy. Or some people may say it is rejection of God. Or disbelief, some people say. In blasphemy indeed are those that say that Allah is Christ. That God is Christ, the Son of Mary. Say, who then has the least power against Allah? If his will were to destroy Christ, the Son of Mary and his mother and everyone that is on earth, who has power to stop him? But to Allah belongs the dominion, meaning the power of the heavens and the earth and everything that's in between, and he creates what he pleases. For God, Allah, has power over all things. Bismillahi r-Rahmani r-Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. We're going to close after I read this in English. This is a very popularly recited verse from the Quran. It's called the verse of the throne. I'm going to recite it though in English. Allah, there is no God. There's no God but He, the living, the self-subsisting. Of course, we know subsistence is to be able to provide nourishment for yourself. In the Navy, when I was in the Navy, maybe in the Army they did it. I didn't get it in the Navy because they provided us food at the defect. But in the Navy, because I was married, they gave me a subsistence allowance. In other words, they gave me a certain amount of money in my paycheck to be able to buy food for me and my family. Actually, technically it's for me, but they know it's for me and my family. To understand that Allah self-subsists. He doesn't need anyone to provide him with anything. And he's not a he, by the way, nor a she. But we use these terms because the Arabic language puts all the nouns in a masculine and a feminine gender. But in reality, we should not think of God as a he or a she. And it doesn't sound right to think of God as an it. So we just say he. But he, the living, the self-subsisting, eternal, no slumber, that's sleepiness, can seize him nor sleep. In other words, he never gets sleepy and tired. But his are all things in the heavens and on earth. And who can intercede in his presence? In other words, who can bargain with him? Who can negotiate with him? Except as he permits. And there's real no negotiation. We just submit. That's all we can do. We don't make deals with God. But he'll tell us, if you do this, I'll do that. If you pray to me every day, I'll help you avoid sin. If you fast during Ramadan, I'll help you avoid those human weaknesses like overeating or maybe looking improperly at the opposite sex or even going out and wasting money on things you don't need. He gives us these obligations, but he also tells us what the rewards are. And it says he knows his creatures. He knows his creatures. He knows what's before us, and he knows what's after us, and he knows what's behind us. And none of his creatures can encompass anything of his knowledge except what he wills. Because his throne extends over the heavens and the earth, and he feels no tiredness in guarding and preserving the heavens and the earth and all the things that he's created, because he is the Most High. He is the Supreme in glory. So we close with our short dua we make every time for our prophet. We say in our citizen Arabic and English, Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala Ali Muhammadin, kama salaita ala Ibrahim wa ala Ali Ibrahim innaka Hamidum Majid. Allahumma barik ala Muhammadin wa ala Ali Muhammad, kama barakta ala Ibrahim wa ala Ali Ibrahim innaka Hamidum Majid. O Allah, raise up Muhammad, exalt Muhammad and the true followers of Muhammad. As you did exalt Ibrahim, as you did raise up Ibrahim and the true followers of Ibrahim, for surely you are praised and magnified. O Allah, bless Muhammad and the true followers of Muhammad as you did bless Ibrahim and the true followers of Ibrahim, for surely you are praised and magnified. And it's traditional to close with this advice to the believers. In Allah Yamaru Bil Ali Walisani Wali Ta'i Zil Kubar Wanya Wal Yanha Nil Fishai Wamunkari Wabagi Yazakum Walakum Zakaru. Servants of Allah, Allah commands justice. Justice, doing what's just, what's right, and the doing of good, and being generous to our kin folks and our relatives, and he forbids all shameful deeds and injustice and rebellion, and he instructs you that you may remember. Okay. Brother, I want you to lead the prayer. You can lead the prayer.
Elhamdülillahi Rabbil Alemin Errahmanirrahim Maliki Yevmiddin İyyâke na'budu ve iyyâke nestaîn İhdinas sıratal müstakîm Sıratal lezîne en'amte aleyhim gayril mağdûbi aleyhim veleddâllîn
Amin.
İzâ câe nasrullâhi vel feth ورأيت الناس يدخلون في دين الله أفواجا فسبح بحمد ربك واستغفر إنه كان توابا. الله أكبر. سمع الله لمن حمده. الله أكبر. الله أكبر. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. اللهم أنت السلام منك السلام تبارك يا ذا الجلال والإكرام. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى سيدنا محمد. صلاة تنجينا وتحملنا من أحوال والآفات وتغفر لنا بها جميع الحاجات وتصلح لنا بها من جميع السيئات وترفعنا بها عندك رب الدرجات وتبلغنا بأقصى الغاية من جميع الحيرات في الحياة وبعد الممات آمين يا مجيب الدارات آمين والحمد لله رب العالمين.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.